Well, we got one SBN. There's a bunch, in case you're wondering. Best championship performance, Jalen Brunson. There you go. Middle of July. Ah, it's the ESPYs. But football's getting closer and closer. College football first, then the NFL. Training camp not that far away either. That's why we talked to a good old pal of mine, Ryan Horvath, who jumped on with us. Ryan Horvath jumps on with me now. First episode of Game Day Garage Campus Blitz is up wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube as well, previewing this upcoming college football season, Heisman odds. But before we get to our football, Mr. Horvath, I have got to talk about what happened with Argentina and England earlier today. I mean, I know you were watching it. I know you were into it. Like, people don't have to, like, care about soccer to understand, obviously, what's on the line. Dude, Messi is unbelievable. He assisted both of those goals. This World Cup has been amazing. I mean, you don't have to love soccer or football, whatever, right? Like, it's just been such an enjoyable tournament.
Oh, absolutely. And we get one more from Messi on Sunday. So I'm really excited for that. Really excited. I mean, the entire tournament has been fantastic. I was having this conversation, actually, over the weekend. What's been awesome, man, is I've been traveling a little bit, and especially being out in New York, New Jersey, with, you know, the matches, the games taking place. You see fans from all across the country. It's so cool. And even people that aren't going to the games that have a rooting interest for, say, England, Croatia, United States, of course, they have all these watch parties outside. So it's like people getting together from all across the country. And I was trying to explain this to somebody. I was like, you know what's cool about the World Cup, in my opinion, is, okay, so if you're LeBron James, you're loved in Cleveland, or you're loved in Miami. If you're Tom Brady, you're loved in the Tampa area and in Boston, but you're hated everywhere else. Like, Messi in Argentina, like, he's a legend, man. He's a folk hero, right? Like, they'll be, if you didn't get to see him, your grandfather's grandfather will be telling you stories. So it's been epic. It's been an awesome tournament. And just the way that they come back, like, in the final 5-6 minutes, and an extra time all tournament long, it's like, oh, this is it. And I know a lot of people, like, as far as like betting, really liked England today. I did not. In fact, my 12-year-old, he's really into it as well. He's back in Chicago right now, but he's a big Messi fan. So I was like, all right, buddy, like $10, let's throw a future down because we're going to be watching the World Cup. Who do you like? And he went with the defending champs because he's a big Messi guy. I agreed with him. So that's who we rolled with. I loved seeing it. Harry Kane's a great player, but I like cheering against them. That's the only problem I have with soccer, man, is obviously you have to sell everything, but some of these guys, they go down like they just got hit with a kendo stick. It's like you barely got touched. And Harry Kane is he's a flopper, but he's an excellent player. You got a feel for England fans. As a Green Bay Packer fan, like, I've been there. Go back to the 2016, whatever the hell that NFC Championship game was against Seattle. So, I mean, it's heartbreaking, but that's what makes sports fun. I'm glad that we get to see Messi, the GOAT, in my opinion, one last time on Sunday. This tournament's been great. Even if you don't get into soccer year-round, like every 4 years, every couple of years, it's a lot of fun with these tournaments, and especially the World Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, we're looking at droughts. 1966, the last time England was in a World Cup final, and, you know, yep. We look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, 1967, we look at their drought. Like, there are some droughts that just stand out more than others. The Cubs already ended theirs. The Knicks just ended theirs. It's, you know, the Red Sox, obviously that was a long time ago, but it's like England and then the Maple Leafs and the sports that really matter to them. They ain't winning, so, you know, we all know. But that's part of sports, right? Some of it is just the suffering. It's going through that and dealing with your team letting you down every single year. In D.C., we know that until it was finally broken in 2018. All right, I want to look at a little ahead to college football for you. You had your first podcast out with P.J. Glasser as well, Game Day Garage Campus Blitz. You get that wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. So it's interesting, right, because this time last year, we were looking at an NFL draft that we thought was going to be loaded with quarterbacks and quarterback talent. Big-time letdowns last year with the quarterback class that we had. Obviously, the draft brought us one surprise with Ty Simpson going to the Rams. Yeah. But when you look at the quarterback class specifically, which obviously ties into the Heisman, given the position that it's there, what does it look like to you, at least at this point, in terms of the level of talent that we could have from the quarterbacks in college football this coming season?
It's funny because going into last season, last June, last July, we were like, this is a loaded quarterback class. But a lot of those guys turned out, at least last season, to be busts. I mean, Lenora Sellers at South Carolina didn't have the season that we all projected. Cade Klubnik and Clemson were a huge letdown. Don't get me started on Drew Aller. Although, man, like, I don't know. Learning under Aaron Rodgers in the right system, he might be a decent pro. But Penn State was a huge letdown. This year's class, in this year's like Heisman odds and Heisman, like this is, there's not going to be any bust. CJ Carr is like a legit stud for Notre Dame. I didn't want to really believe it because I haven't been excited at Notre Dame for a quarterback since Brady Quinn. Like Sam Hartman was fun, and I know Riley Leonard, like they go to the national title game, but it was because of the defense and the run game. CJ Carr is one of the favorites right now to win the Heisman. I think he's definitely, when he does come out, going to be a top five pick. But as far as like pro potential, man, if I had the number one overall pick and I was a GM, it's between two guys. It's between Dante Moore, the quarterback from Oregon, who we all thought was going to come out and be the number two overall pick, which he would have been. I mean, if Ty Simpson went that early, where do you think Dante Moore was going to go? But he had a little bit of a stinker in the college football, a little bit. He was awful in the college football playoff. Also, like, I question how mature he was because if you remember, I really liked him in high school, which, you know, you can't really project, but he was a five-star. He goes to UCLA, and his camp forces Chip Kelly to put him on the field right away. Well, he wasn't ready. He ends up getting benched. I think he ends up getting hurt. But what I liked is he went to Oregon knowing that Bo Nix was going to be there and he wasn't going to be the starter. So he got to learn the Will Steen offense. Now, though, Will Steen's left. He took the Kentucky job. So it's Dante Moore. It's kind of like a huge prove-it year, in my opinion, for Oregon. It's going to be not the toughest schedule, but the Big Ten, you know, it's still tough. And for Dan Lanning, like, he's this – everybody loves him. He's like the golden boy, but he hasn't really won the big game. He was out-coached by Kalen DeBoer a couple times when Kalen DeBoer was at Washington. So I think it's a big prove-it year for him and for Dante Moore. But I do think that there's a good chance that Dante Moore might be the first quarterback taken if, you know, there's a chance that Arch goes back to Texas, because that's what I was going to say. If I had the number one overall pick, I think I go with Arch Manning. I think he has the highest ceiling. Last year, there was some really, there were some bad throws in there, but I mean, like, he was kind of thrown in there inexperienced and they had no run game. The offensive line really struggled and they had no run game. He was their leading rusher. So I think with a more well-rounded offense, you know, I do think that he's probably going to be the number one overall pick if and when he decides to come out. I wouldn't bet him to win the Heisman, I don't think, because you're only getting like 8-1 odds. But I do think that it's going to be a big bounce back year. And all the haters, everybody on social media, you're going to realize like a lot of these guys, they're kids. They're 18, they're 19 years old. There's so much pressure. And imagine being Arch. I mean, there's pressure on CJ Carr and Dante Moore and Darian Mensah and Trinidad Chambliss, but I mean, you're Arch Manning, man. So obviously tons of pressure, but I think he's going to live up to it. As far as like, if you want to throw a bet out there though, I got one for you. Darian Mensah. I bet this 25-1. I think I actually did this on the first podcast that we did in June. It's all the way down to 11-1. The reason I like him, he goes to Miami. Last year he was at Duke. They paid him like $4 or $5 million. Duke was a really weird team where every week they would outgain their opponent by like 300 yards, but they just couldn't stop coughing the ball up in the red zone. It wasn't his fault though. They should have been a 10-win team. They do obviously go and win the ACC, but he was excellent there. He threw for almost 4,000 yards, 34 touchdown passes, and he only threw 6 picks. Now he goes to Miami. Last year, they're in the national title game. Not the biggest Mario guy, but I really like their offensive coordinator, and I really like the weapons. They're going to bring back second-team All-American wideout Malachi Toney, who we all watched in the national title game. He could take a 3-yard screen pass to the house any given moment. And they also got Cooper Barkate from Duke, who had 1,100 yards. So he comes over as well. It's going to be a much better offensive line than he had at Duke. So I like the potential, or the ceiling, I should say, for Darian Mensah. Like, if you're into sports betting or if you're looking for something to cheer for, I like his odds even still at 11-1, but this is a loaded quarterback class, man. I haven't even talked about Trinidad Chambliss. You know, there's always going to be that like wild card, that guy that comes out of nowhere. And then you have what I think really interesting, the last one I'll throw out there, Julian Sain, obviously at Ohio State, and he has Jeremiah Smith. So he's going to throw for a bunch of yards and a bunch of touchdowns. Yeah. But I'm really interested to see Sam Levitt at LSU. 2 years ago, he was at the All-11 Manning Camp, or On-11, whatever the hell they call it. But everybody that we talked with, all the scouts, Mike D'Attelier, all those guys, said that Sam Levitt was the best quarterback at that camp. And I thought that was crazy talk because it was Lenora Sellers and it was, you know, Arch and all those guys. But then Arizona State 2 years ago goes to the college football playoff. Last year, they didn't have Scadaboo. The team wasn't as good. But now Levitt goes to LSU with Lane Kiffin. So I know there's going to be a lot of pressure on Lane, but look what he does with every single quarterback, man. Look what he did with Jackson Dart, first-round pick. Hell, he had people believing that Matt Corral could be an NFL quarterback. So Sam Levitt, again, if you like the betting odds, man, 28-1, and I think he could be like that dark horse Heisman candidate and that dark horse top five pick if he has a bounce back year, loaded with talent at LSU, with Lane Kiffin. He's a guy that I'm watching out for as well.
Ryan, you mentioned Lane Kiffin, which means we have to talk about Lane Kiffin because he's polarizing. He's a lightning rod everywhere he is, everything he says. Are you a Lane Kiffin guy? Do you like the move to LSU? Where are you on all this? Because as you know, it's never just normal with him.
Right. I actually am a Lane Kiffin guy. Now, if you would have asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have said no. Because head coach, man, I want a guy like Cignetti, right? Like Cignetti, after he wins the national championship, I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to go on my couch and I'm going to have a beer. I wouldn't have wanted Lane 10 years ago because, hell, 15 minutes before kickoff, you might catch him in a co-ed at the bar. You know what I'm saying? But like now, I really do believe that he's matured. I like that, like the cockiness, right? I like that about him. So I am a Lane guy. I don't really fault him for leaving Ole Miss. It sucks, right, that he kind of abandoned his team, that he leads to the college football playoff. But it also had to suck for him. I mean, those were his kids. I think he really did want to coach. We weren't in those meetings. We don't know really what went down. I like him. I will say this, though. I mean, he has to win. And it's not like you get a year or two, because Brian Kelly got paid a lot of money to have a fake accent. They hit the portal for him, right? Like, they gave him – he had Jaden Daniels. Like, let's not act like he didn't have – like, he had the Heisman that year. He had a ton of talent, and they couldn't win because they couldn't fix the defense. So we know Lane and the offense are going to score 40 points per game. Can he bring, like, a toughness? That's what I want to see. I like the moves that he's making. I like bringing Coach O back. But, man, you look at that schedule, and it is rough. They kick off the season against Clemson. They get Ole Miss. You think Ole Miss is going to be motivated for that game at home September 19th? They get A&M. Kentucky's going to be better this year. They got to go on the road against Auburn. They get Texas November 14th. They get Alabama the week before that. Listen to this stretch, actually. Auburn, Alabama, Texas, Tennessee, and Arkansas on the road to close out the season, man. So can they go, 11-1, 12-0? Absolutely. But can they win 5-6 games and everybody be calling for his head year one? Absolutely. That's what I love about college football. It's changed so much. I love all the moves that he's made, but it's like time to put up or shut up. And I know he won last year, and I know he's won the last couple stops, but he's got to win there. They're going to be calling for his head, man. Coach O coached the greatest college football team of all time, and 2 years later, he was in the unemployment line, granted with a lot more money. And he wasn't in the unemployment line. He was on the beach shirtless. Yeah. But you get what I'm saying, man. Like,
oh, yeah, I know.
Right away.
I was there on the beach shirtless, and it was okay, Rod. I still won some football game. We good. Yeah.
So we'll see. Pressure's on right away. But I do like him. I watch the sport to be entertained. So some people might be like, man, Cignetti is a jerk. I don't know. I get a kick out of him. Like the whole Lane doing yoga shirtless, hitting on chicks still at his age. I get a kick out of it. If it was my dad, I'd be like, hey, man, put a shirt on and grow up. But I don't know. Like, I watch this. That's what I love about this sport, is there's more characters, I would say, than in the NFL. Right? Like in the NFL, I guess we find out that they're characters, but that's not until the TMZ reports come out.
Well, yeah, that's true. You mentioned Indiana. Right. It's still weird. Talking to Ryan Horvath here on The Fan, it's weird to say Indiana as the defending champions and not talking – well, I mean, I would say basketball, but it's been forever since we've seen that from them. Now it's Kurt Cignetti, maybe a little bit more of a test. You're going to have to replace a bunch of stars. What do you see from Indiana heading into this season in terms of their ceiling and really what could go wrong for them too?
Honestly, man, I think that they could do it again. I think they could run the table again. And the reason being is every year, right, like Alabama would lose a bunch of guys and we would need something to talk about. So we would be like, is Alabama going to be okay? But when, and I'm not talking about Kalen DeBoer, Alabama, I'm talking about Nick Saban, Alabama. But every year we were like, wait a minute, a bad season for Bama. They go 10-2 and people are calling into Paul Feinbaum, calling for Saban's head. I just think that might be Indiana. And I know it's crazy to say, because it's the name Indiana. But again, man, it's funny because when I was covering college basketball, like 14, 15 years ago, the first year Northwestern goes to the NCAA tournament, Chris Collins was the coach, and he's like, you guys always talk about Duke and North Carolina and these blue bloods. College basketball and college sports are going to change so much that, like, it's going to be about, like, who finds different ways. And that's what Indiana's really done, right? They're not going after these five stars, right? Like Coach Cal in basketball, he wants all freshmen. You know who's winning right now? These teams like Florida and Todd Golden, because they're going and getting grown men in the transfer portal that have been in different systems, but that are like ready to be in the pros. And now maybe they're not ready to be in the pros, right? Mendoza, he was really good at Cal, but the offensive line stunk. So he gets more money. He gets paid millions of dollars to go to Indiana. That's the difference between college sports now, right? Like back in the day, you would be like, man, why does Jadeveon Clowney have to go back to school? He could get hurt and lose a ton of money. Now these guys are making all the money. I mean, of course, they're going to make more in the NFL, but I think Indiana has figured out how to do it. The blueprint, man, is don't go after 18, 19-year-old immature kids that are looking for the bag. Go after 23, 24-year-old immature kids that are looking for the bag, but also looking to move up their draft position. And so that's what they did again. And they bring in Josh Hoover. He might be even better than Fernando Mendoza. And I honestly wouldn't hate like him as a Heisman contender either, just because it's kind of like what you know, like what Lincoln Riley did. Like, you know, we were like, oh man, it's almost like Heisman University, and it's Kyler Murray and it's Baker Mayfield. That might just be Indiana's system. And it's almost like the way that they run it, like the Naval Academy. It's like military type style. I mean, everything's really buttoned up. You don't go there and screw around, or you're not going to play. You're going to get punted off the team. So you could just trust them, I think, until Cignetti, if he even takes a bigger job or leaves, I think they win 9, 10 games every year, man. I'm not betting against them ever again.
All right, before you go, your name came up on this show yesterday. Metal Chris, who is the producer, who you just talked to before you came on, is a big-time concert goer, as are you. And I talked about your Dave Matthews concert totals. Metal Chris, what is your largest amount of concerts in 1 year you've gone to? What was the number yesterday?
I think it was like around 125.
Have you ever come close to that, Ryan?
125 in a year? Yeah. No, actually. Not in a year. Well, the year that I, like, the reason I got so high on the Dave list, got up to 125 is because, like, one summer he was touring with Dave and friends, like, with Trey from Fish mainly. And so I did 60. So I think that's, actually, I know, I did 62 because I did 60 of those. And then I saw Pearl Jam twice. But I'm trying to get up there. I mean, I've had a lot of time on my hands, luckily. So this summer, I do think I'm at like 71, but I'm kind of winding down now for whatever reason. I go see Goose a lot. They're already done for the summer. I think I'm going to see Dave like two or three times every summer. He's getting a little bit older, but there's a lot of like younger guys and just like nostalgiacs. I think I'd rather see than spend all my money on him, but I'm up there for sure, man.
I think you two both should just have a reality show going around to concerts together. Both would be great at it.
I'd be down.
I'm in. I'll bring the party favors.
I bet you will. All right. Ryan Horvath, Game Day Garage, Campus Blitz. Check out the first episode on YouTube and wherever it is that you get your podcast. Great stuff. It'll be going on every week, previewing the college football season. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Great to talk to you. Also, hey, Commanders win total over. Matthew Golden, receiving yards and touchdowns for the Green Bay Packers. Bet the over. No, he's going to have a sophomore breakout, I promise.
I was going to ask you about the Commanders win total, and I got caught up in concerts. And
don't
I'm
even
so
worry about
glad.
It. I already told you. I think they win the division as well. What is that, 6-1, 7-1? I mean, if you got $5, $10 in your pocket, throw it. I don't trust Dallas. I don't trust Philadelphia whatsoever. I think it might be a disaster. Although I think Jalen might have a big year now that he doesn't have to worry about A.J. Brown reading and getting his ear on the sidelines. But no, I like the Commanders to bounce back. I love the draft. Got to fix up the defense. It comes down to can Jaden stay healthy. So I believe that he's going to. I'm Team Jaden until I die.
This is why I don't have to worry about anything with you. You are a professional, and I don't have to ask you questions. You just give me what I need.
Exactly.
Good to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. See ya.
There he goes. Ryan Horvath. Give him a follow on all the socials as well. Yeah, over on Commanders win total. I like it. Let me tell you something. There's nobody that is better at predicting the NFL draft and betting the NFL draft than that guy right there, Ryan Horvath. Very, very good. Nick Ashew on The Fan. We could be close to a LeBron James decision, and there's history to tell you that we might actually be there. Nick Ashew on The Fan. So I saw this from DraftKings. I love the internet. July 8th, 2010, 3 days before the World Cup final, LeBron James announced his decision, the original decision, to go to the Miami Heat. 3 days before the World Cup final in 2010. Then July 11th, 2014, 2 days before the World Cup final, he announced he was going back to Cleveland. Then on July 1st, 2018, during the World Cup round of 16, he announced he was going to the Lakers. So if LeBron James' team announcements have been 2 to 3 days before the World Cup final, give or take, obviously you had that round of 16, so that kind of throws it off a little bit, the decision could be tomorrow. I hope it is, because I'm ready
for the news cycle, if that's what he's going for.
I mean, it makes sense. It'll be quiet, and he'll own the entire news cycle after that, right?
One would imagine, yeah, unless somebody super famous dies, but...
Well, okay, so tomorrow's Thursday. Baseball's back. We have one game tomorrow in baseball. That'll obviously overshadow baseball. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think that's what it's going to be. I think LeBron James announces tomorrow that he's going back to Cleveland. I'm going to stick with the Cleveland thing.
How much are you putting down on that?
I'm not putting anything down on it because nobody seems to know, man. There's like reports everywhere, and it's just like people that are actually in front offices of teams, and it's, again, these are anonymous sources, but whatever. They're just like, we have no idea. We literally don't. We don't even have to lie about it. We have no answer. And you kind of get to a point where you just go, I'm running out of ideas or any sort of just theories at this point. I mean, again, I still lean on Cleveland as the most obvious choice, but the Warriors make a lot of sense for one final season so he can play with Steph, and they've always talked about that. I'm actually kind of leaning slightly more Warriors. Well, so here's the difference. There's the what I think he should do, and then what I think he will do. I think what he should do is go back to Cleveland. I think that's the best way to wrap it up, career, final time, like it's go back one more time. Remember, Scottie Pippen actually finished up with the Bulls one more time, too, just as an example, right? Like, you can go back one final time with your team and, you know, go on that retirement tour, whatever the case is. What I think he will do, I'm kind of starting to lean away from Cleveland and more towards the Warriors. Because it's like, everybody on the Warriors is in the same place. Draymond's at the end of his career, Steph's at the end of his career, LeBron and Steph have been friends for a long time. The Warriors will be willing to kind of go out and make some other moves to just kind of make this roster fit with some of the young guys they have. It'll be a fun kind of just LeBron and Steph playing together for a season and, you know, just kind of put a bow on his career.
Might as well send KD back to the Warriors if you're going to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, then you can start getting crazy with it. Again, like, none of this, there's no, like, perfect fit. It's just one of these things where, because, like, again, none of these teams are going to win a title with LeBron anyway. And I know you say never, Metal Chris, but I'm going to say never. He's not winning with the Warriors if he goes to the Warriors. They're past that point. They won 37 games last year. They're not getting through the Thunder. They're not getting through the Spurs. It's just not going to happen. I am happy to say never here, okay? Now, if I'm wrong and the Warriors win a title with LeBron James, you have bragging rights forever over me.
Do you remember the 01-02 Detroit Red Wings?
Barely.
They were the old team that won the championship, the Stanley Cup.
But what were the teams they had to go through? Like, is there a comparison at all between the Spurs and Thunder?
I mean, I don't remember everyone.
So that's
in the
my point, right?
Like, I don't know, but
you can cherry pick it, and that's fine. But like, what did you have to go through? That's part of the comparison with this here. Like, we can talk about Jordan's Bulls winning all those titles, but, like, who did they have to go through? That Jazz team? Come on. I mean, like, they were good by those NBA standards, but they scored 58 points in a finals game, or in a playoff game. No, 58 and 64. I mean, they couldn't score. So, you know, we can look at LeBron's Cavs losing 3 out of 4 in the finals to the Warriors, but that Warriors team was historic. So, the comparisons aren't necessarily apples to apples. All I'm saying is that no matter what it is, it'll be fun, it'll be an interesting storyline, and then it'll wrap up probably with either losing in the play-in tournament or in the first round of the playoffs if it's the Warriors. That's as far as it goes. But it'll be fun to watch. Look, the NBA can't have LeBron and Steph out there forever. They're still the faces of the league because they're the most recognizable, but they're not the best players in the league anymore. And the NBA is ushering in a ton of new young talent. Some is already there, like an Anthony Edwards. You know, I mean, you throw Nikola Jokic to some of those guys in, but they've been around the league a little bit longer. Anthony Edwards is on that lower tier. But, I mean, this draft we just had and last draft, gosh, there's some good players between Cooper Flagg, A.J. DeBonta. Cooper Flagg was originally supposed to be in this draft class. You imagine? What would the Wizards have done if they had A.J. DeBonta, Cooper Flagg, and Darren Peterson all to choose from? I would have traded down in that hypothetical situation.
No.
Yes, because you could have still had any one of them and traded down. You'd have another opportunity. If you traded down from 1 to 3, you could have had Peterson, DeBonsa, or Cooper Flagg, whoever's left, and get a whole bunch of first-round picks. Oh, I would have done it in a second.
Nah.
Those are all you. No matter what, would have stayed. Who would you have taken
there? This is the thing I was thinking before we knew what the Wizards were going to do. Now we've all seen it, but like the weeks leading up, we're all talking about the draft. I was like, there's no way you don't spend three seasons tanking, finally get that number one overall pick, and then trade it away. You just don't.
Yeah, but you could have a number one
matter.
Pick.
You don't go through all that to trade it away.
I'm all about getting more assets if you can.
I hear what you're saying, but you don't go through what they went through to get to that point.
You're valuing all of that as only having the number one pick as the end result and the best result. But
I'm
in
just
reality,
saying,
it's
do
the
you
value
think,
of
do
that
you think
spot.
Leontes would have been cool with the GMs doing that at that point? Like, he'd be like, come on.
You could have had two more first round picks and Cooper Flagg, yes,
I'm
absolutely.
Just saying, man, I don't know, man. I don't think so. I don't think you trade
Chris
down
Miles.
That in that
I
position.
I need to present this conversation to Chris Miles because we talked about this yesterday, and I want to see what he would do. If you had that number one overall pick and it was Darren Peterson, Cooper Flagg,
I hear what you're saying in the angle, but I just think, again, from what, like maybe another team with the number one overall pick, that might be very well what they would do in that situation. I don't think the Wizards were going to be
okay,
that team.
That's fair. If you're saying the Wizards specific.
Wizards, yes.
But again, that goes back to what you should do and what you will do. And that's two different things. See? I still can't think about that, though. Like, Cooper Flagg could have been. That was a great draft last year, too. The NBA is in such a great spot. Man, they have so much young talent right now. And I don't know if we're really going to be able to establish who the face of the league is for a while. And I get it. Like, it's, you know, it's a thing that's still. Most of the time, there is more than one player that fits in that category. We've just gone through an era where it was Jordan, clearly was the guy. Then you had a gap from 1998 to 2003 when LeBron was drafted, but LeBron was seen as the guy that could be, but it was still kind of Kobe there, and you had Kobe and Shaq before Shaq went to Miami in that era, and then it was like, well, is it Tim Duncan, and then the Spurs are in there, so you had this like 5-year gap, and then Kobe was still kind of the guy, and then it was LeBron kind of etching, you know, getting closer and closer, and then sort of surpassed him. So there's going to be a transition era no matter what. The question just becomes, like, what does that look like? And you have to win. Victor Wembanyama is going to be near the top, but he hurt himself in the finals because he's looked at as a dirty player now, and he played dirty. And you can't do what he did in the finals and have people look at you and say, yeah, that's a guy. Like, listen, best player in the league, there are going to be people love you, people hate you. It's a guarantee. But you can't do what Victor Wembanyama did and then expect to be as, you know, marketable. Like, that hurt his image a lot with the way that he played in those finals.
Yeah, I think some of the tantrumy stuff he kind of did too, you know. I don't know.
It was just a bad look.
It didn't
look
good, man. It didn't, no.
It was a bad look all the way around. And that's not even just the way that he, because, I mean, listen, like, it's not like LeBron doesn't whine. It's not like LeBron doesn't, you know.
I know.
It was more of the dirty plays, the taking Jalen Brunson's head and throwing him or trying to land under his feet when he, you know, twisted his ankle.
Well, I know, but doing that and then combining it with then whining to the refs, it's like,
yes.
you can't, come on. Like, you can't do both of those things.
He really hurt his image, man. I think he really hurt his image in those finals. Now, people can start to forget it, and you can chalk it up to immaturity. He's, what, 22? You know, like, yeah, you're immature at 22. We all are. Even somebody that trains with monks. Now, do I think he needs more monk training? Yes. I think he needs to spend more time dribbling a basketball up a trail in the woods like he did before to really think about the decisions he's made. He needs to go to his room and he needs to think about the decisions he made. All right? But, you know, he's going to be in the conversation. Anthony Edwards will be there. But I think I would argue that ship has sailed for Anthony Edwards in Minnesota. Like, the Timberwolves, you got to be a team that's actually contending. They're not a team that they've already peaked in the West. And now they trade for LaMelo Ball. That is not going to work, by the way. A backcourt of LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards, it might seem fun at the beginning. They're going to get sick of each other. And Anthony Edwards is going to get real tired.
No, there's too much ego there.
Too much. And yeah. Too much just ball dominance. Like, it's just not a good fit at all. Too much erratic play from LaMelo Ball. And, you know, there's not enough defense there. And Anthony Edwards prides himself on defense as well. Like, it's just not going to work. So, you know what? I'm going to go back to what I just said a minute ago. I'm going to pull this back. Anthony Edwards, maybe that's the next star that asks for a trade.
Yeah, I actually kind of thought he might have this offseason.
Because you remember in the end when they got eliminated, he was walking over.
Put him in Miami with Giannis.
Well, that would be. Now, that's a team that maybe in the East I'm going, ooh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Now it's, but again, that doesn't exist right now. So we play hypotheticals.
Yet, but him and LaMelo start butting heads halfway through a poor start to the season.
I don't think
the trade deadline comes up. Like,
I don't think it'd be the deadline, though. I think they'd wait till the – if it started to bubble up and become a problem, they're going through the season and trying to smooth it over before it then becomes a conversation.
I think it depends on how many they have in the loss column. That's a big factor going to be on that.
Yeah, it'd have to be really bad. I mean, yes, it could get super dysfunctional, and then you're just going, okay, then they just
– sometimes that happens, man. They fire a coach in the first, like, 2 weeks of a season kind of thing, and just the team just keeps spiraling, you know.
Well, who knows what A-Rod's going to do? He's one of the owners there now, so he might just say, screw it, and gut the whole thing. That was the thing for a while, was that new ownership was going to come in and gut that roster that was there already anyway, and they've started. So maybe they decide, LaMelo Ball is the new blood. Anthony Edwards, we're tired of you. We're going to trade you. Teams would line up to trade for Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards in, like, a bigger market or, you know, a team that's in the finals, whew, man. That's just marketing gold for the NBA.
I bet Celtics would want him too.
Oh, the Celtics would be a team. I'll tell you another team that needs a running mate for Cade Cunningham, the Detroit Pistons. I don't know what they, you know, if they gave up a bunch
Detroit,
of first round,
I could see him working there.
Anthony Edwards in Detroit, because listen, the Pistons are a storied franchise. Detroit's a big market. That's a great basketball city. I mean, I know it's been a while since the Pistons have been in that conversation, but they won 60 games this past year. If they were to trade for Anthony Edwards.
Again, that 60 games was a little.
It's inflated. No, I don't think that.
Bama Dyer 60 games.
No, I agree. They're not going to win 60 games again next year. But, you know, again, a team that goes and makes a trade and brings in somebody like Anthony Edwards that could boost his profile, that team's winning. I mean, he's in. Because that's what really helps, right? It's the exposure in the playoffs, which we saw this year. That's what boosts a lot of players' profiles. So if Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves, and that's just a mediocre team next year, I mean, they were 49-33 last year anyway. They regress more this coming season. Anthony Edwards, Nikola Jokic, the two guys that I could see at least potentially asking for a trade in the next year in the NBA. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I can't wait for the World Cup final on Sunday. England knocked out again earlier today. Argentina coming back and winning 2-1. More Messi, because this is probably his last ride. And, I mean, you don't have to be a soccer fan to know his greatness, right? 39 years old. Just an absolute, I mean, monster. Just unbelievable. Really. To see what he's doing at his age at this point, at 39 years old, still dominating the game the way that he has, scoring and, I mean, 2 assists in that game, just... It's just so much fun to watch.
I feel like with this World Cup run, even if they don't win, he has ended the debate between him and Ronaldo.
Yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo did not have a great World Cup. I mean, and Messi has been. Now, you could argue, 2 years older or whatever. Fine, whatever. It's still. 10 career knockout stage assists for Lionel Messi. That's 6 more than anyone in the last 60 years. Messi's got a goal or an assist in 11 straight World Cup games. Going back to 2022, that's the longest streak since 1966, and he's got 8 goals in this World Cup.
I mean, it doesn't get more higher stakes than that either. It's like high-stakes, high-pressure games, and he still is performing.
Just such an elite level. And watching, I mean, that's, to me, one of the highest levels of greatness that gets one of the lower levels of attention is sustained success late into your 30s, right, or early 40s. Tom Brady playing the way that he did into his 40s. LeBron James now. People spend more time criticizing LeBron as opposed to looking at how unbelievable he is at 41 years. Like, he's better than 85% of the NBA at 41 years old. 90% of the NBA at 41 years old. I mean, it's insane what he's still able to do. I mean, it's one thing to have a few good years like, you know, Lionel Messi or LeBron or Tom Brady or whoever, but it's another to just keep doing it and doing it. I mean, just the consistency. I mean, Messi's been playing since he was a kid, you know? I mean, I remember where he was in his early 20s and we're talking about him maybe being the greatest player of all time. We are there, and it's also really flown by. I mean, it just feels like it is just flown by with Lionel Messi now at the end of his career, but here we are. And to have 2 assists in this game earlier today and Argentina winning and moving forward to just probably as good of a matchup as we could possibly have in this World Cup final. It's the first final ever between the reigning champs of Europe and South America, the first 1-2 in the FIFA rankings final since they started that in 1992. Argentina's 7th final also. They're chasing title number 4. And we haven't had teams win back-to-back since 1962. So Italy in the 30s won back-to-back World Cups. Brazil did it in 1958 and 1962. Been a long time. So there's a lot of history on the line. Messi and how he wraps up his career, because he's not going to come back in 4 years. It'll be 42 turning 43 in the World Cup. It's not going to. I mean, maybe. Maybe, but probably not, right?
I mean, no, that's a long time. Maybe he'll come back and do some. What else does he have to do?
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure he has business ventures.
No, I just mean like on the field. Like,
right. He has nothing left to prove. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter whether.
What else is he chasing?
It doesn't really have anything. It's necessarily. It doesn't always mean it has to be something that you have to prove. Sometimes it's just literally. You just want to keep playing.
Yeah, some of these guys don't know what to do with themselves if they're not. I think that's some of it, too. I think that was a lot of Tom Brady, honestly.
Oh, I mean, yeah. It was clear. I mean, his wife was basically like, you need to retire. And then he came back, and she's like, well, screw it. I mean, that's clear. He couldn't get over football. And I get it, though. Like, it's really hard. This is your entire life. And then it comes to an end, and your body doesn't do what it used to do. And you still have all this life ahead of you. You're late 30s, early
40s. But these guys are also, they're creatures of their routines and habits. You know, they've been training a certain way every year and every day and working out and, like, appetite or diets and whatever. And, like, all of a sudden it's like, well, that's all done now. And you're like, but this is how I've always lived my life. It's like, no, we're done. Let's go, whatever.
Right. It's an insane adjustment to make. And, you know, so not every pro athlete feels that way. Some of them are tired of the grind and they're over it. They're done. They're like, I don't want to be on this diet. I want to be able to eat more.
Like Megatron? Or
whatever. Yeah. You just get sick of it. And you're like, that's it. I'm done. I don't want to have to go through it anymore. I get it. Like, I mean, it is what it is. You know, Patrick Willis retired really young. He was a great linebacker. I mean, sometimes it happens. And there's plenty of guys we can come up with, obviously, for this. But... you know, there's a certain point where you just physically can't do it anymore. And you don't want to also be, you don't want people to see you broken down either. Like Messi coming back at 43, what does he look like, you know? He's likely a shell of himself. Maybe he can still play somewhat. We don't know. That's 4 years in the future. But it's also, you kind of want to preserve your legacy a little bit. Because that does matter to these guys. And it's fair. You've earned the right to control your legacy and walk away when you want to walk away. Can't wait for this, though. And we had the third place game, so that's cool. You get a couple more World Cup games that are at least on the books. It'll be fun. You know, but to see Messi go out on top, I mean, that's just, that really just feels like.
He hasn't done it yet.
I know.
So, which I don't know. It just makes it, it means everyone's going to be betting on him.
Yeah.
On Argentina.
Spain is allowing one goal, I think, this entire tournament.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, Spain is also a dominant team.
Spain's really good.
But everyone's heart is going to be in. Oh. With Argentina, and I just feel that's where you often find traps in betting.
I know. You are absolutely right. I mean, that's the thing. What you were saying is exactly what I've been thinking. Is like it feels like the perfect end to Messi's career, and then Spain ruins it. I mean, that's really what it could come down to. So Spain is a slight favorite at -150. Argentina's +130, if you're interested in that. And anytime goal for Lionel Messi's +145 on FanDuel. So... yeah, Spain is the favorite in that game, and it tells me that they're probably going to end up winning. Like, it's just going to be, like,
but
so close.
Messi has a thing. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he can pull rabbits out of hats.
I mean, so, yes, he can. Like, yes, he can. That's very true. I mean, it's just that I was talking to somebody. My wife and I were in Hilton Head last week, and, you know, somebody, we were at, like, a bar, and we started talking about the World Cup because sports just bonds people. Guy was like, you know, who are you rooting for now? The U.S. was out. I was like, Argentina. I want to see Messi go out on top. And it was just like, he was like, yeah, me too. And I just feel like that's going to be the common trend with a lot of people. This is just like, yeah, most people are going to look and
you want to see history.
Yes, absolutely. It's just cool. Like, we remember Jordan retiring with the Bulls and how he retired. It was perfect. It was the perfect ending to a career.
Well, he retired the second time for the Bulls. You mean.
We don't. Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. The real retirement from the Bulls. the official one. John Elway going out. A couple Super Bowls, done. Like, going out on top. You know, thanks to Ryan Horvath. Check out anything you missed on the podcast. Metal Chris, great stuff, buddy. We're back Friday. I'm on 980 tomorrow. Nick Ashew on the Fan.